That's like a thing people are so bad at with improv. The funny thing happens when you lose. You want to be losing a lot.
You actually have some really great writing advice. Be an idiot. Be willing to look stupid.
That's so funny because I feel like I was like a submarine underwater, like struggling to stay alive. I didn't think it was ever good.
Classic artistic self-hate.
And I've been thinking about it of like, you gotta stop not liking yourself.
You're like, nope, no can do.
I'm constantly dissatisfied. Why aren't more people subscribing? Don't become like a guy who sells courses. I hate that.
Your homepage says there's over 15,000 subscribers. Who are these people and where do they come from?
It's a weird mix. It seems like people who like weird, funny stuff. I don't know.
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Today, we are speaking with Alex Dobrenko, a writer and comedian with a very popular Substack newsletter called Both Are True. He also holds the head of creative role at Sublime, which is a knowledge management app, and writes another great newsletter there. I have not really seen any other newsletters that look and sound quite like his. There's this great kind of raw comedy improv vibe going on. So Alex, I want to start with comedy. So in a post of yours from January 2023, you said that your thinking when you started the newsletter was, what if I did stand up but on Substack? What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, thanks for having me. This is cool. I think that came out of stand up has always been like my dream, you know, like my lifelong first dream, sort of my like my Moby Dick or whatever, like my my great White thing whale. that I've never been able to do like I wanted. And during the pandemic, I like quit my job and I was like, I'm going to do stand up for real. But it was during the pandemic. We had just had a little kid and I was like, doing open mics sucks, like really, really bad, you know,
and it's like your family with a one drink ticket.
No. And it's just the time. It's like, you have to spend so much time at these open mics. And I think like, if were I a little younger, maybe it would have worked or whatever, but I didn't want to do that. And Substack was just like, it seemed like something was happening, you know? And I was like, what if I did that? Or I think that my thought of like, what if I do stand up on Substack? I don't know if it came that early. I think it might have just like kind of
evolved.
It seemed to be what was happening. And what I was doing on there was just like kind of riffing with myself, you know, as if I were on stage in front of an audience and sort of just imagining what they were saying back to me and kind of playing off of that.
I think I saw somebody like saying in like the comments on your post that like they always read them out loud or something. Maybe somebody who did an interview with you saying that in the intro, they're like Both Are True is the only newsletter that I read out loud every issue, which is crazy.
Yeah. And people often say that like they can, they hear my voice as they read it. Like they hear me saying it, which I really like. Yeah. It's just pretty deranged, you know. It's like
pretty deranged.
Yeah, in a way that I love.
So, a little further back, before we get deeper into things, the first post I found from you was in June 2019. It's very simple. It's titled "Miranda July is Dope." I think you'd been listening to Miranda July's story in like NPR and then The New Yorker or something, and you basically just it's so short. You're like, yeah, this story is great. I stopped listening to it to write this post. Anyways, here's some quotes from it. And then you made that post, and then like then you post again for like a week straight. 6 months later, right after you quit, I think it was this place Tug you were working at. You've been working at for like a decade. And so I'm like, okay, he quits his job. He's like, what am I doing myself? I'm gonna write some posts. And then, then there's like so that was 2019. So then it's February 2022 that you really start. So 2 years later that you kind of start in earnest. Don't want to go there yet. tell me, why did you like, what were you doing? Had you been like journaling somewhere else? Had you blogged in the past? Like, why did you actually write these, you know, lone posts back in 2019?
That's so funny because I feel like those, it's like I was like a submarine underwater, like struggling to stay alive, like really thrashing about down there, like trying to get myself to give myself enough confidence to to write something, and then like every so often I like came up for a second and did like the most
barely enough ballast.
Totally. And then immediately like came back down. Because I think I've wanted to do this for a really long time. And I've fought like self-hate and self-worth, low self-worth issues of just like, it's not good enough. It's not, you know.
When you say do this, do you mean like do some kind of creative thing with an audience?
I think I mean write a blog, honestly. Okay. I think I've loved reading blogs. I've loved being on the internet in that way for a really long time. And I think I've always wanted to be a part of that, you know?
Yes.
I think it's that.
I really relate to that. I feel like I spent years of my life not really between like when I was on RuneScape forums when I was in sixth grade to like after college, I wasn't really much of an internet participant. Okay. Were you calling it Both Are True, or was it just like Alex's blog back then? Where did that name come from?
Well, I had a thing before Both Are True that I was doing for a little bit called Goofing with Friends, because at some point I was like, that's all I want to do in my life is goof with friends. And so I was like, I'm going to call it that. And then that didn't, you know, that just kind of faded or whatever. Both Are True. The reason I call it that is like, whenever I'm on acid, I kind of come to the realization that both things are true. Yes. And it's always like deeply profound that like, you know, that like we spend so much time like debating over whether one thing is or the other thing is. And it's just like, dude, it's both. It's always both.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and it's often also like the end of a therapy session is like, oh, right. No, both are true. Like so it's like, I don't know. I just love that phrase. And I just kind of went for it. I never thought that like people really dig the name in a way that I did not expect, but people really. And what's funny, too,
it's like a mantra.
Exactly. Exactly. And now whenever it comes up in conversation with friends or whoever, like I have to be like, yeah, ring the bell, baby. You know, like that's my phrase. Cause it's like, they immediately are like, oh yeah, both are true. And then they have to like, be like, I'm sorry. And I have to kind of also apologize that like, I've kind of owned, now I own that phrase.
No, don't apologize. You know, rake it in.
That's true.
I love a title like that. It reminds me, there's this book I like. There's this artist, Robert Irwin, who, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's like, works with light and space kind of thing, like 70s, 80s. He really came up. Anyways, he's great. But there's this book about him called Seeing is Forgetting the Name of the Thing One Sees, which I just love that. And
damn.
It's like a one of those kind of mantra phrases that I often think about. Mm-hmm. So you got
really
one of those
good.
Nailed. Yeah, right.
Another one of that just came to my mind of those is David Foster Wallace's. I think he said it, and then it became
Consider the
book the
Lobster.
I'm always saying that. It's although of course you end up becoming yourself, which I like. That I like. That just kind of plays in my head a lot. You know, of like it's just so beautiful. You know,
No, that's really good. Okay, let's talk about your writing style for a bit.
Yes.
I know you've talked about this a bit on other podcasts too, so we might retread a bit, but it's stuff worth getting into. So there's this post in January 2023 where you say, I guess my North Star has been to just be as honest as I can possibly be without upsetting my parents. Is that still like a good like one-liner summary of it?
The new frontier is upsetting my parents.
Yeah.
Like that's the new, like genuinely, like the stuff I'm struggling with to write now is stuff I know they won't like.
What won't they like about it?
It just deals with stuff that they don't really know about, you know, addiction stuff. It's weirdly glib to say because it's actually very dark and hard to talk about, but my therapist committed suicide, therapist that I like loved. And that's like fucking crazy. You know, like that's the one thing a therapist is not supposed to do, you know, like genuinely.
Jesus.
And she was such an important, and I joke about it because I like can't grieve it properly. Like it really hurts to genuinely think about it.
It's incredibly intense.
And also very weird because it's like someone who you're so close to, as soon as that happens, they're like, it's like a business transactional relationship. You're not allowed to go to like a funeral. You're not allowed to like, yeah, they just, the wall comes up. So
client,
it's
patient. Yeah.
Exactly. It just gets very weird, and it's been very weird. And, you know, I'm trying to write about that, and it's really, really hard. And so it's stuff like that, that they don't know about. That happened too with like Beautiful Disasters. I don't know if you read that one, but like
that was your most popular one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is crazy, 'cause it's also like my longest one. It's like 45 minutes or whatever, but my mom still doesn't
took the word count. It's 7,000 words.
Yeah. Yeah. Like my mom still doesn't know about that one. I told my dad, and he was like, yeah, your mom can't find out about this.
Yeah.
So I hope she's not listening to this. I really doubt she will.
Well, saying all this too, I think need to apologize. I think this is like a really good example of like what your writing is, which it's like, it's really intimate. It's not quite like I stumbled upon your journal and picked it up and read it, because it is written to an audience like that's in there. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it is kind of that intimate journalistic quality, not as in journalism, but as in a journal. But still irreverent, like you're talking about these intense things, but in a way where it's like, you know, humor is the coping, etc. Before you wrote this, you were saying you kind of always wanted to do blogging. Did you have like a personal writing practice before, or was this more like the like short film stuff you were doing? That was the extent of it. No, really, like just for the written word of it all.
It was honestly mostly it varied. I think I always had like an outlet of some sort. For a while, it was like, yeah, film, short film, my series Distance that I did.
Yeah.
Then like it was Twitter comedy videos. It was a lot of like sketch comedy videos. There was always like a lot of ideas and like some avenue to express them wherever that felt right at the time or whatever. Yeah, that was always true. But this definitely was the first time where I was like, I'm just going to write about me, you know, and not really like have too much of a like performative thing to it. Or if it is, it's like still me rather than like, here's a funny idea about like,
it's consistent, at least, not just like one off performatively.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Has it? Yeah. So 5 years, 3 years of doing it in earnest, 5 years of like doing it on and off. Do you think your style or voice has like sharpened in a way that's noticeable to you?
Definitely. I mean, yeah, I think that first year, even when I started writing regularly, I was still thrashing about, you know, I was very like, I didn't think it was ever good. And I think I've gotten more confident, and people have, they've say that, you know, and people also say like, I seem happier, which is cool. Though I don't know, like these, like lately I've been in a kind of downturn, but, I think I've honestly gotten so comfortable with like the way I write that it's kind of like gotten boring. And I don't mean that in a douchey way, but like in a, like every essay kind of ends the same, which is like, I sort of bring together elements that don't seem to be connected. It feels like an improv show ending.
Both are true. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, no. I relate to this a lot. This happens to me writing Creative Spotlight. Like what kind of my mantra I try to approach, and when I'm not delivering on this, I'm always like frustrated, which is like every other week, is like consistent but not predictable is kind of always my goal. Like I want it to be consistently good, but like I want there to be a different hook for the next newsletter. I want it to end in a different way. I don't want to just tell the same story every time.
Totally. It almost feels like too easy or something, where I'm like, oh, like you guys are gonna like that again. It's that thing of like kind of hating your audience too, where it's like, you know,
you
like,
rubes, you sheep, oh, you like totally. This slop. Yeah.
that thing of like, you know, I wouldn't have any be part of any club that would have me as a member, like that thing of like, which I'm working on all of it. I'm working on, because the disdain I have for anybody else is, including my audience, is really like disdain I have toward myself.
Yeah.
You know, like it's all, that's all it really is.
Classic artistic self-hate situation.
Man, I know. That's really, I was just with my my wife and her parents, and her mom was just like, you gotta stop not liking yourself.
You're like, nope, no can do.
Well, I mean, I really was, and I've been thinking about it, of like, I do play that character, you know, I play that up.
You're doing it now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, maybe I don't always have to, but it's, comedically, it's a shtick that works.
Yeah.
But does it serve me as a person? I don't know.
Yeah, potentially you know? Great monetary ROI, terrible mental health ROI.
Totally.
Totally. Let's talk about the improv stuff for a little bit.
Yeah.
I really first, one thing, I interviewed Rachel Carton a few weeks ago, who writes the Lincoln Bio newsletter, really good. And, you know, so she writes about and interviews a ton of people who work in social media. And I asked her if she sees any particular commonalities between the people who are best at this. And she said all the best people who work in social media have a comedy or an improv background.
Wow.
Why do you think that is?
I mean, I think you're really good at coming up with ideas. At like supporting each other's ideas, like that sort and you understand comedy, you know, it's not that there are rules and there are like, you just like your brain speaks in comedy, you know, so you can
riffing.
Yes, exactly. And you understand that language, I think, really well. And you can just come up with a lot of bad ideas and you're not afraid to come up with bad ideas.
Yes.
You know, like, I think, yeah, I've so much of like is that of how I like write and think. It's just like I don't even have to think about it, but I'm writing comedically. Like there's I'm like, oh, this is like a nice setup and that's gonna like weave into that, and then I can like kind of do a turnaround there, but I don't think any of that. But it's like I know.
Well, you've like trained yourself to.
I do that on stage. Yeah. It's just like natural for me. So I think that's probably.
Well, so one thing there's a few things I wrote down from your. I went through way too much of your archive last night.
I know. I love it.
It was a lot.
It was a lot. I'm still recovering.
It was really disorienting. I did do another couple hours of it this morning to like, okay, what did I miss? So one thing that you wrote that I really liked is be an idiot, be willing to look stupid, which I think is so important.
Yeah. I mean. That's like a whole genre of comedy is like idiot work or like it's like clown work, idiot. Like there's like a thing in LA called like the idiot workshop. And it's actually I struggle with it because you have to like it's very physical. I've done like classes and stuff with it where it's like
Physical clowning. Yeah.
Yeah. Clowning. But like they call it the idiot workshop where like you really are just supposed to be a dumbass, you know, in a way that's like very not self-conscious. You know, you're just like. I don't know. I can send you some videos of it. It's beautiful to watch people who are good at it.
Well, I think two other things I want to connect this to is one, I don't know who said this, but it's like one of these internet isms that I'm always thinking like, don't kill the part of yourself that cringes.
Yes.
That's cringe. Kill the part of yourself that cringes. Yes. But then also like I'm not necessarily a sports, I watch a lot of soccer these days, but I never really played sports growing up. But I think like, I've realized like, that's also just such a like, sports type of thing too, which is like, you know, you learn to accept failure and pick yourself up and do it again, which I totally missed out not playing sports as a kid. But now it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, like it's all the same thing. Like you're just, you fail, you learn, you fail, you know, you raise your hand in class and you ask a stupid question, you move on, et cetera. I don't know.
I mean, that I think, and maybe this guy answers the question about like why social media improvisers are good. It's like, that's what makes an improv show great is it's when a mistake happens and how the performers react to it that makes improv so good, you know? And like, because good improvisers, when something weird or dumb or bad happens, that's like clearly a mistake, they'll fold it into the show like that. And that will often be the best part of the show, you know? And what they're actually telling
you, yourself, consistent but not predictable.
Exactly. And what they're saying to the audience, especially in live, but in any of it, is like, I'm okay with failing, which is really you saying to the audience, you're safe. You're okay. Because the audience, like my wife says it all the time. She's like, I'm so anxious watching improv because I don't want to see them fuck up, you know, because the risk is very high. But if the improviser says, hey, I'm okay with that. I'm good. You're good. Yeah. We're okay. And then it's like, great. Let's have a fucking blast.
Safe hands.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So wait, another thing you said about the talking to the audience. Again, I'll quote your newsletter. Don't dumb shit down for your audience. In improv, we were taught to play to the top of your intelligence, which is like, I have a distinct memory of being in fifth grade, and my teacher, I was like, had written some assignment, whatever. My teacher was like, Francis, you got to remember that your audience is stupid. You have to assume your audience is stupid. And I think that's like, you know, maybe useful for like a fifth grader, but I think so misguided. Like, you have to rid yourself of that for like more higher level mature writing, right?
Totally. Totally. That's a UCB thing of like play to the top of your intelligence. It's like, don't dumb stuff down and don't like slow down to explain anything.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, and don't worry if people don't get your references. Like, often I would get notes from people on my stuff. Like, I don't get that reference. It's like, all right, if you're curious, you'll look it up. And if not, you'll keep going. But it's like, but for the, like the 5% who get it, they're going to be like, oh my God, you know? And I think it's just, it's a respect thing. It's like, what it shows is like, I really respect you. I respect you regardless of where you're at. Like, I'm just going to talk to you as though you're like a cool friend, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to like somebody who I have to like sit down and be like, okay, and well, there's this concept and you have to, you know, like.
Like your 2-year-old son.
Yeah. It's like, it's diminutive or whatever. It's like. Treating them like they're lower than you, lower status, you know, which is also an improv thing, like status games or whatever.
Oh,
like,
well, you want to be low. I don't know about that.
So status games are like every scene essentially has a status game, which is like someone's high status, someone's low status. And the high status person is like, you know, shitting on the low status person. And the low status person is kind of doing dumb things to try to get high status. And it's like. But you have to like know your role, which is the same thing of like being willing to be stupid and also being willing to lose. That's like a thing people are so bad at with improv is like you don't want to fight and win. Like the funny thing happens when you lose. You want to be losing a lot, you know, because that's funny.
That's how you put on a show.
Exactly. Exactly. It's rough watching somebody try to win. Like, or like really want to win. And then maybe
nobody
win.
Likes it's a striver.
Like, that's like drama or melodrama. Mm-hmm. But like comedy is like somebody trying and losing big, you know?
Yeah. So you're doing all this on Substack now. You realize like a year into writing in earnest that this is kind of what you were doing. Now, you know, your audience has grown a bit. You're more popular. Do you see anybody else kind of trying to do this? Like are there imitators? Little Alexes?
tiny little Alexes. Not exactly. I mean, I think there's people who tell me that they try to write like me, which is really nice. But it never feels exactly. Sometimes I've read things. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's like you're doing a both are true thing. But that's not common. And I don't think it's quite hard.
It doesn't, it's just you so baked into it.
Yeah, exactly. I think I see people who are really good at their thing, their voice. You know, that I think that's what makes somebody great, period. You know, is like when you're just like, yeah, this is that person. You just know. You just like feel it.
Let's talk about the audience for a bit. So right now, your homepage says there's over 15,000 subscribers. There's a bunch of other milestones. I stopped at them all when I was going through your archive. September 2021, which, you know, you posted like a dozen or so posts by now. You weren't really putting much into it. You posted about quitting your job and you said you had 27 subscribers. About 2 years later, you're like, and that's a lot. You wrote that. 2 years later, January 2023, you have been doing it in earnest for 1 year. You're at 2,177. Now we're almost 2 years later and you're like seven times that. So two questions. Who are these people and where did they come from?
Who are these people? It's a weird mix. It seems like women like it more than men. On the whole, or at least they're more active in the comments section.
Yeah.
Which I think is great, or, you know, whatever. A lot of them come from Substack, you know. I feel like a lot of it has come through Substack's organic network and like me being recommended by other people. I've tried to like name who they are as an audience, and I've never really been able to figure it out in that way that you're supposed to. But it seems like people who are like, they like weird funny stuff. I don't know. I'm not really good at like naming the audience. I wish I could do it better. but they seem to just really like what I'm doing. I don't know. That's well,
they
a
like your
answer,
they like your earnesty. No, no. I mean, they like your earnesty. They like your like kind of your willingness. Everything we've been talking about. Your willingness to lose. Your willingness to put yourself out there. Your willingness to like try again and try again. And like your willingness to like just put yourself to be vulnerable, right? And I think that's what you do is you're very vulnerable in all these things.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them genuinely worry about me.
Yeah.
You know, like I think
they check
I
up on like, you. They're like, oh, like how's he doing? Let's make like, sure he's good.
In the comments, they're like, Alex, like you, it feels like they really care. Which is like, I think a function of me being that open. And, you know, it's like, they want me to be okay.
Yeah. You're like this comic Dostoevsky character.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So, how about
I will also just let me say one more thing about that, which is like I don't know how to speak of them in the aggregate, but I know a lot of them personally, which is like people. I like that my comments section feel like a party, you know, and like and they really do. Lately, I haven't
a bunch of them have like 140 comments or whatever.
Totally, and I haven't been able to respond as much lately, which is kind of sad for me. But like they. It just, I think the best way I've been able to understand it is because I'm so vulnerable and honest, people feel like they can be too. And so they just kind of come in the comments and they're just like, here's my weird shit. And then it's like, great, we're all hanging, talking about our weird stuff. I think that's probably one of the most beautiful parts of it that I've been able to like cultivate.
Well, because now it's been like for people who've been commenting on them for a couple of years.
Totally. I call them bat heads. You know, like both are true heads.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're batshit crazy.
Exactly.
Let's okay. Paid subs. So
yes.
There is a post in September 2022. You have 767 subscribers at this point, and you turned on paid 3 months before, 3 or 4 months before, and you've got 34 paid subscribers. You're not offering like any extra, you know, paywalled content, whatever. It's kind of just like, hey, I do this, you like it. Why don't you support me? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you keep going on. I could keep listing times you posted about this. How's the paid subscription base looking these days?
Man, it's not a thing I'm happy about, which is it.
Oh.
It's okay. I think we might have just turned a corner. But for the last year, it's basically been pretty flat at about like 350 paid, which like to that person that you're. To that Alex that had 77 or whatever, or like 30, like...
Oh, when you're 27 people total,
It'd be... all of this is crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, your britches, they get bigger. And so, like, I'm constantly dissatisfied in a way. And I'm just like... It feels like a game that I need to, like, win. Which is like, how do I get more people to subscribe? Why aren't more people subscribing? I view it as a indictment of my own work. Like, oh, it's good, but it's not that good. You know, and so it has been pretty flat. A couple weeks ago, though, I started basically doing like paid recommendation posts, which I'd been like really not wanting to do for a while, even though I always like store all that stuff of like stuff that I find interesting.
Yeah.
And then I did it. And that has like in the last 2 weeks converted like 10 new people.
Oh, wow.
So it seems like there's something there.
Yeah. Because I feel like this is such a big kind of trope of like of newsletterdom now. I don't know if you read Emily Sundberg's piece a few months back. Yeah. Machine in the Garden or whatever, which kind of talks about this. Now, yeah, that was a whole hot button thing. But saying like, you know, it makes sense if you just see somebody's recommendation post and you're like, why is this paid? It like might not make sense. But then when it's like, oh, this person posts all these essays, whatever, and this is just like, you know, you support them and then you get like a little bit deeper look into, you know, who they are and what they're into. And like it's a little more of an intimate thing when you're already so invested in what they're doing.
Exactly. I think that's why it's working, is a lot of people are like, I love him. And now this, like I can make it make sense, you know? Yeah. I think I've always struggled with how to make it make sense, you know, of like why people should pay, whether they should get anything. And I've tried so many different things. Nothing has ever like stuck in a long-term way. Yeah. And hopefully maybe this will. I don't know.
Do you pay for many newsletters yourself?
I do. Yeah.
It's one of these things. I was talking to, I forget who I was talking to about this a few weeks ago. It was Caitlin Dewey of Links. I would G-chat you if you were friends. Uh-huh. And I asked her the same question. And, you know, we were kind of talking about how there's this, like, your paid content budget that includes, like, oh, somebody's newsletter that you know. And, like, Paramount Plus and, like, you know, whatever newspaper you subscribe to, like, all these things, which, and it's like for me, I'm constantly changing it. Like, I'm usually paying for like a couple newsletters, but then it's like, I'm going to unsubscribe to this one. Now that one has to come in. And I maybe should feel guiltier about it.
Why?
Well, you know, it's good to support people. It's good to support people doing things you like. But yeah, which actually, this is something I always like to ask people. How do you define the term creator in like the internet content sense?
I really like what Max Reed wrote, said about this.
Yeah, he's great.
Recently about like, it's just like a personality driven maker, basically, where like you're making stuff. And what's really most important is that it's you making it. And it could be writing, it could be video, it could be whatever, but it's like, it has that singular point of view. And that's really what people come for, is like the guy, you know, the person.
Yeah. That's a good definition. No, that's a good one. The one that I've been working with for a little while is, like, this is as boiled down as I could get it, is somebody who's making content for the internet for an audience outside of people they know in real life. So, you know, if you're posting on Instagram on a private account for your friends and family, you're not a creator. If it's a public account and you, like, are thinking about an audience beyond the 100 people you know, you're a creator. And then I think, like, then there's the other side of it, which is, like, the professionalization and trying to make money out of it. I also like to talk about it in terms of, like, versus what is an influencer. But I find less fertile ground there. I feel like that those lines have kind of blurred. Maybe they were more different 7 years ago, kind of the same now.
Yeah. I mean, I've tried to be an influencer, where I like, I don't know if you read this one, but like, you know, that thing called the light phone, that like sort of lo-fi. I did.
You emailed them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I emailed them and I was like, hey, cause I write a lot about like AI being awful. You do, yeah. And I was like, hey, I write about this. And like, maybe my audience would like your phone. Maybe would you want to send me one? And they were like, sure. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I wrote a review about it.
Yeah, you had 8,000 subscribers at the time.
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I did it again recently with this thing called the Daylight Computer. Do you know what that is?
I'm interested. You also interviewed the guy. I'm interested in this. How is it?
Yeah. Yeah. I got it.
Oh, there you go.
It's badass. It's really badass.
Are you using it before bed? Like
I use it before bed and I sometimes use it like just to like write out ideas, you know, if so I don't have like the screens, you know, and it just feels like a different experience. I wish I could do it more, which is part of what I want with what I was talking about with Anjan, the founder. But I've also tried and failed where like I reached out to this like baby carrier company and I was like, hey, what do you think I could, you know, and they were like, no, we're good.
Yeah, look, you write about parenthood a lot, you know?
Exactly. Great. That's what I said. I think they fucked up, honestly.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I want to talk about your professionalization and your, like, becoming a creator influencer in earnest. So, number one, are you familiar with the YouTuber musician Andrew Huang?
No, I don't think so.
I was not familiar with him until earlier this year when I interviewed him. I was looking up, like, when I started writing Creator Spotlight, I was like, has anybody, like, written any books on, like, creators, creator economy recently? And I found his. It was just about to come out. It's called Make Your Own Rules, Stories and Hard-Earned Advice from a Creator in the Digital Age. And he's basically been on YouTube for a while. He like has never had a real job. He's like 40. When he was like 19 in college, he like started making money by selling his songwriting services on eBay. So he's been like doing the internet creative thing since before it was really like meant for that. But anyways, the way the book's good, I read it. It's written very much for an audience of like creative artist type people who aren't used to thinking about what they do in a business way, who might be struggling with the idea of selling out, etc. And so when I'm going through your archive, I was thinking a bit about this, not the idea of selling out, but just like I could see you starting to professionalize and you're talking about welcome emails and you're talking about like, mm-hmm. you know, you bring in this character, Brad Conversion as a way of like sublimating your like distaste for talking about these kind of things. Yeah. But by now, by the time I get to like, you know, the most recent post, you've kind of accepted it. And it's like a way of operating that you have kind of grown into. So tell me about like this process of like accepting that this is something you wanted to do and you had to like find ways to operationalize and, you know, et cetera, term, whatever.
Yeah, it's a really good question because I feel like I kind of miss how much I was wrestling with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it because I think I was like, I think the thing that I, my whatever the opposite of a gold star is, or like a North Star. My yeah. South Star was like, don't become a like, would don't dream. Become like an in, like a guy who sells courses.
Yeah.
You know, like just don't like. I was just I hate that. You know, yeah. or like a coach. But then
you don't want to run a multi-level marketing scheme.
Exactly. I want to make fun of people who do that. Yeah. You know, because I think it's very funny that like it's all like the internet largely is that is people teaching other people how to do that. You know, and then, but at the same time, it was like, how do I make money doing all this stuff? You know?
Yes.
And like the most that I've made on Substack through paid subscriptions is like 15 grand a year,
mm-hmm.
which is yeah. again, like for that 27 subscriber guy, crazy,
but that's not
genuine,
like a living wage. If that's
but
what
it's
you're doing.
Not, yeah. how do you support a family on that? You know? And it's yeah. like, and so, yeah, I think I like, I at some point when I didn't have a job either, I just basically started to be like, I'll help you with your writing in yeah. both kind of like a help you like think about how you brand and market your newsletter and also like the writing itself, which I mm-hmm. enjoy more, but people want more of the other one.
They want
and I started. Yeah. yeah. Yeah, exactly. They want that growth, baby. And so I like did a few clients for free to get mm-hmm. Testimonials. And then I started like getting clients and then I got more and like it picked up and it was going really well. And then Sadi from Sublime kind of asked me like, hey, would you want to do what you do with Both Are True at our company Sublime?
Yeah. We've like, been doing this newsletter. Why don't you take it over?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, and that was like full time and I really like what they're doing. I really like her. So I decided to do that. That was like literally almost a year ago
yeah.
or a little less than
your
a year ago.
Your first issue was February this year.
Yeah. 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 And so, yeah, I've been doing that and I've kind of had to tone down the like, you know, client work client. Or whatever.
But these are your three ways of like making a living is you do all three of these.
Yeah. What with like Substack, clients, Substack, and then
Sublime. Sublime. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I was curious if Sublime was full time. So you do the newsletter, your title's head of creative. What all do you do there?
It changes by the day, man. Yeah, exactly. It's like it's three people and then a few engineers is the company. Mm-hmm. It's very small. I think we just sort of like reoriented my role for next year. It's going to be a lot of like partnerships, which means like working with cool creative people and having them share Sublime with their worlds, you know?
Yeah.
So it'll be a little less like Substacky, which honestly could be cool. I think that Substack is like very Saudi specific. I think they want her more than they want me, you know, in a way that's like, I understand. So we'll see, but it's really fun. I think that what they're doing is like genuinely very cool. You know, this like tool for collecting cool shit online and seeing what other people are collecting.
It's a knowledge management app. It's kind of like a Pinterest or an Arena, but like in its own very specific kind
exactly
of erudite way, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's cool. It's like, that's a world I've always been fascinated by and like dabbled in with all of these tools. And so it's like, it's fun to actually work in it.
Yeah. Wait, while we're on the topic of Sublime, I really want to talk about the book of interviews you just published. So it's called Whoa, Volume 1, Conversations to Make You Feel Human. And you talked to 8 people. You made 100 physical copies. You can buy a digital version, podcast, etc. It's a cool project. I kind of want to do something like this with Curtis Spotlight, honestly, publish some interviews. I wanted to read to the little description for it. As the world goes... cue the trailer music. As the world goes bite-sized, short form, full of platitudes and hot takes, we are drawn to deeper conversations, honest explorations, and more emphasis on the humanity of some of our favorite thinkers, creatives, builders, and technologists. How did this project come about?
So a big part of my job at Sublime was to interview and talk to people, and it kind of broke into two categories. One was called How I Sublime, and that was like, show me how you use Sublime, you know, and then we'll like basically as like user stories, case studies or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the other we call like the Sublime interviews, which are like, hey, let's just jam for a while, you know, and like, let me talk to people who I find inspiring. Mm-hmm. And so I did a bunch of those and we didn't really know what the output was going to be. Like we weren't sure. And then we had all of them and we were like, what if we just, and Sublime had made a zine last year. So this wasn't their first rodeo in the zine world. And they were like, let's just make a zine. And so we did. And we like turned these long, you know, hour to 2 hour long conversations into these like 5 to 7, 8 page interviews. And I guess what happened as I was doing the interviews was like the same topics kept coming up. I basically like with all of them, I was asking what I was genuinely struggling with and still am, which is like, how do you remain hopeful and optimistic in a world that's like very dark and cynical and pessimistic?
Yeah.
And it was just getting like their takes on that, you know, and it was really mind blowing, honestly. Kind of all of
What are some of the like 2 or 3, I don't know, memorable moments? Not doesn't have to be a full interview, but like some word or answer that's really stuck with you.
I think one in particular is Adam Mastriani. He writes Experimental History. And he's like one of the first people that like recommended my newsletter to his audience, which is huge and has helped a ton. And he basically was like, the globalization of all problems keeps us all unhappy in a way that makes no sense. And like, just stick, like, find one thing that, like, find your thing that you want to be really good at, do it really well, but like, don't try to do everything because you can't. And it's making you miserable thinking that you can. And I thought that was just like really, like beautiful. And then another was with Anjan, the founder of Daylight, where we talked a lot. That was like probably the one I got most emotional in. I like started crying at the beginning of it because he talked so much about like his parents and the struggles of depression and he talks about forgiving his parents. And I just think that that's really powerful, and it's not a framing I've ever thought about, that like you need to do that when there's not been any, like, they didn't wrong me in any kind of like specific way, but like, of course, they're not going to do exactly what you need.
Of course, they've shaped the banks of the river that is your life a little bit.
Totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally. Like, even I see with my kids, like, my son needs so much, and I don't come close to, like, delivering 100% of the goods, you know? And that the gap is, like, that's where humanity is, you know? But, like, but there's, like, a deep pain in that lack of fulfillment. Yeah. And I think... I'm just trying to sit with that and sit with like what that would feel like to forgive them, you know, while also not making them the bad guy. That's the that's the both are true.
Forgiveness doesn't require. Yeah. Both are true.
Ring the bell, baby.
Okay. Something I want to go back to the other one. Don't make every problem your own. This reminded me of another thing about being a creator, going back to the, like, what's the definition of a creator thing, I think, which is that like, a creator, once you get to the point of like trying to make a living doing it, it's like it is a many hat situation. You basically become like the founder of a media business, and you have to think, okay, what's my content production flow? What's my schedule? How am I going to make money? Oh, I got to go negotiate deals. Like, how am I going to structure my paid offering, et cetera? So I think that is what a creator is too, is like, in once it becomes an actual thing, you're a media business founder, which maybe get your word on that. But also, I know that about a year ago, you hired somebody, Aaron Shetron, I believe is their name, to help you out with this kind of thing, like to take some of that burden. So tell me about the decision to hire that person and like what, why you had to do it and what they do.
Yeah, I mean, I was just like really flailing on the sort of organizational front of like, I just had all these ideas and I never, you know, I would always just like write my post the day before or whatever. And what that meant was I was avoiding the hard posts, you know, because like you can always do the easy thing a day before. And I posted this like pretty bonkers job post in like a Both Are True vibe in a few places, in a few Discords, like I think including Culture Studies Discord that I was a part of. And Aaron's sister saw it and sent it to Aaron. And then Aaron sent me an email that was like the most Both Are True email. It was just like, I loved this person, you know? And I was like, oh, this is, I was like, I felt like it was an honor to work with her. And yeah, and we started working together. And so, and she's helped me with the everything as small as like editing individual essays, but like thinking about what Both Are True is, what the paid offering is, how to communicate. She's just like, she's like a producer, like a creative producer. And she's amazing. I love her.
So you also, you have a writing partner too, Ray Katz, I think, which is another thing about this. I think the whole creator thing is, it's so often this solitary thing. And, you know, I always like it when I see people who are working with an editor or with like just with other people in any collaborative way, because I think it's like people should work together in society. And that's just a, like a baseline good. But yeah, tell me about that, like this having a writing partner relationship and how that's different than having Aaron there as a creative producer.
Yeah, I think, well, Aaron actually worked with Rachel, who's like one of my best friends too. And I think the difference is like with Rachel, like we're just sort of like complaining to each other about everything, you know, without really trying to problem solve. Whereas with Aaron, it's like I'm complaining and she solves the problem. You know, I think
it's like that meme. Do you just need somebody to listen, or are you in the problem solving stage yet?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I think, but honestly, with both, I think the most important thing is what you said. It's like you're not alone. Like this is all so lonely. And so it's just like less fun that way. You know, like, and I, there's another woman, Madeline, who also helps me with editing.
Yes.
And like, we're in a Slack together, and it's just like, it's fun. Like, it's genuinely so much more fun to be in that kind of communal, it's not like a writing room at all, but it's like, there's some little bit of that, as opposed to just like me, you know, by myself. Because comedy doesn't work alone, right? Yeah. Like, you need, it needs
you need other people to laugh.
You need that, you know, and or at least tell you that it doesn't suck, you know, like that's often what I, when I send a draft, I'll be like, you got, does this like really blow or no, you know, and like often, usually they're like, no, you know, and sometimes I believe them and sometimes I don't believe them, but yeah.
No, I like that. I basically do this alone. I mean, I've got shout out Tom. He'll be producing this.
Shout out Tom,
designer, etc.
Big ups to Tom.
Big ups to Tom. He does the hard work. But just to say, speaking about AI, I sometimes I'll use AI. Never is it in a generative way. I don't like to do that. But like I'll put it in and be like, hey, I'm trying to get this piece. I'm trying to lose 300 words on this piece. Can you give me some suggestions on where to do it? And like ideally, like it's just, I'm just doing that myself, where it's like I write a full draft on Monday, on Tuesday I'm like editing, on Wednesday editing again, Thursday editing again, you know, giving yourself that time and space. But I will admit, I did on the last issue, which I thought ended up being a really good issue, this was the first time I had really done this like, hey AI, can you like tell me to what I should cut? And I was doing no copy pasting. I was doing going back and reading, being like, I think it's right. That actually is a good place to cut. And I was surprised.
Dude, it's I use it all the time. I'm not against using it.
Yeah.
I it's getting scary because I ask it to write in my voice, you know, and I don't tell it what that is.
I haven't done that yet. I'm scared of that.
I was just like, write in Alex DeBrenko's Both Are True voice.
Yeah.
And it's a little haunting, how good it'll be good and then it'll totally slip, you know, but like even the little bit of it, I'm like, oh, boy. You know,
yeah,
it makes me feel really weird. I don't know.
We don't have to go so deep into AI. How much time do you think you spend on your newsletter? Because you're not, I feel like it's not so consistent. There's not like expect this version of this every Thursday, or like with Creative Spotlight, every Friday you're going to get this interview, right? And that's like so on the dot, 11:11 every Friday. Anyways, how much time do you spend doing it in as much as it's consistent?
I try to post twice a week. We just moved across the country and two little kids. So that's really been what's been making it a lot harder. It really depends too, where like sometimes I will write an essay like in one sitting in a couple hours and it will just be like, that's it, you know, and then I'll polish it or whatever. And then there are some essays that I spend months on. And so it's just like, it really depends. I would say on average, an essay probably takes me like 10 hours, you know, maybe
Beautiful
more.
Disasters, which was like 7,000 words. How long were you working on that?
That took a long, long time. I mean, I was writing that in my head for years. And then like the actual writing I wrote, I like pulled an all-nighter the night before publishing it. Like, I just like, I went really hard on that essay, you know, in a way that like...
As you should.
I don't know. I want to do that again. You know, with stuff that was really, it was a beautiful disaster, you know, writing it. And I'm really proud of that one. Like I read that one when I've read it recently and I'm just like, damn, this is actually really good in a way that I don't usually feel with my stuff. Not that I don't like it, but I'm just not like,
no, you have your favorites. You have your favorite children.
Yeah, totally. I do. I like when it makes me laugh when I'm writing it too. If it can make me laugh when I'm writing it, that's a great sign.
Yeah. One piece I want to reference again. It's from June 2022. A very joking piece. It's titled "After 10 Years of Writing, Here's Everything I Know." And there's one thing in it, which is just one long paragraph. It's basically a written skit about don't buy a new Moleskine notebook. It won't make you write more, and then you end up buying one. But then a little later, you know, a year or two later, you have this one, it's the 6,666 subscribers post. You actually have some really great writing advice. That's a really good post. I recommend anybody listening, go read that. It's much less, it's still cynical, but in a funny way. But okay, I guess question is, what I got from that, like, here's the 10 ways of, you know, 10 things of writing. What I got from that was like, what I think is my core piece of advice, which is always just like, you just sit down and do it. You write a thing by writing a thing, and like that's the only advice that matters. I'm rambling on a bit. I guess my question is, what do you actually have any writing advice that you would give in earnest now?
Yeah, I think I do. I mean, I think the thing that like this is what always comes, this is sort of where all of my conversations with like people I work with come back to. And I was like doing freelance editing for a while, and the thing that I found again and again was like, the thing that you are struggling with in your essay is what the essay is about.
Yeah. That's the point of writing an essay, is to struggle with the thing.
Yeah. And so wherever that block is, that is the essay. Like, figure out what's happening in that block. That's where the heat is. Like, because you're struggling with it, like, that's a conflict. There's something happening there. Explore that, because that's where the juice is, you know, like in improv, that's, we call it heat. It's like, that's where the heat of the scene is like, it's something isn't right here. Otherwise you would have just cruised through it, you know, and we want to be in that. And people don't want to do that. They want to be like, I have a problem. Let's fix it so I can get to the essay, which is really about something else. Like, no, dude, the essay is that thing, you know, it's like, I think that is, I need to like remember that myself, honestly, because it's really easy to forget. But I think it's more often true than not. It's a great like just thing to remember if you're feeling lost of like, yeah, what's hard right now? Where's the difficult thing and why might it be difficult?
Think I'm a big believer that like the point of writing an essay or like any or an opinion piece, whatever it is, anything that's not just like reporting straight fact is like to write it, to struggle with it. You're not going to have the conclusion. You shouldn't have the conclusion like preconfigured. Otherwise, maybe that's like you're writing a political speech or whatever.
Totally.
Speech at a wedding where it's going to end where you're like, oh, and you know, to the bride and groom. But like the point of an essay is to struggle with an idea.
Totally.
Yeah. What's your relationship like with social media these days? I know we talked a little bit earlier about you're making the comedy videos on Twitter. You still get 11,000 followers there. But you also tweeted 3 weeks ago, I wish I knew what to say on here, and it got 6 likes. But we connected on Twitter, so there's that.
We did. It got 6 likes. I mean, that really is, that was a real moment of honesty on there. I had like a heyday on there. I was like you part did. Of comedy Twitter, and you know, things were just, it was all cruising. I was like, it was like a manic.
Well, RIP Twitter, it's X now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. And like, I think what holds me back from using it more besides like the musk of it all is like, I'm confused.
For a second, I thought you were talking about a smell, and then I remembered what the actual, anyways, sorry.
I think I feel weird that I'm not like as big on there as I used to be, which is really lame, but true. I mostly use Substack notes. That's sort of my weapon of choice these days. That's where I spend a lot of time. I do videos on there and like the same sort of satirizing as like the 10, you know, the one tip I learned in 10 years, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Of,
oh, like, this reminds me. Wait, so one thing, you had this series, speaking of satirizing, what was it, like Messy Ass Spaces?
Which
is so funny because I interviewed the guy who did Workspaces, which I think you were riffing on months ago. I was like, which is such a funny like newsletter inside baseball moment. But anyways. What do you want to be doing with, you know, all this, let's say 2 or 3 years from now? Would you like to be like writing Both Are True full time? Do you want to still be doing this in Sublime? Do you want to be doing, you know, consulting for other people's newsletters full time? What are you doing 2 to 3 years from now in a dream?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think I could still be at Sublime if that's going really well and it's cruising and we're having a lot of fun. I think I am devoting a lot of time to Both Are True. I think maybe I'm, let's say it, maybe I'm publishing a book, of essays. I have a little story about that, but I can,
I'm happy to hear it.
Okay. I once wrote in a post that, I was like, and if any agents out there, want to help me sell my book, Crime and Punishment, please reach out. And like this agent from WME reached out as a joke, but not, you know, like we were and then it was like, oh, clearly like,
unless,
you don't, so you're saying there's a chance. And it was like, and then I just asked her, I was like, we were just kind of goofing for a while. And then I was like, so what would it take to like sell a book, you know? And she was like, well, do you have anything you're trying to write? And then I like very manically wrote out this like pitch for a book that like, again, I've had in my mind for forever, but I'd never written it down. And I sent it to her and she basically, I was like, am I crazy? Is this like insane? She was like, no, you're not crazy. Like, here's kind of like the things I would do next.
Oh, sick.
And I haven't really done those things. But you know, I basically have a book deal. Is what I'd say.
No, that's sick. That, I mean, you figured out, you broke through like, you know, the outer layer of the castle a little bit.
I mean, yeah. And I think it could be cool. But I'm also, I used to do a lot of stuff with acting. And with acting, I was so thirsty. You know, I was so like begging agents to represent me, like so needy. And I think I've realized that like, I want to do the opposite here. Like,
well, you also you were living in LA and now you live in Asheville. I feel like you've given that up.
Totally. I want it to be that, like, if somebody wants to work with me, they'll reach out. You know, yeah. I want it to feel like that and not like me begging for their help. Yeah. And more like it being mutual. It's a lot healthier for my mental state.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, I think we'll end it there. Keep his mental state healthy. Listeners, go subscribe.
Please.
Alex, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, man. This was awesome. Thank you for all the research you did. This is it was really fun.
It's the funnest part of my job. All right. Well, this has been the Creator Spotlight Podcast, and I will see you next week. Thank you for listening.